and welcome to The Hearing, our music review show here on the channel. I'm John.
And from Chicago's North Side, I am Scotto.
And without further ado, on to this week's album, which is from 1963, King of the Surf Guitar by Dick Dale. This is our Dick Dale tribute. He passed away a couple of weeks ago.
We're getting to things as quickly as we can, of course.
Dick Dale, born Richard Anthony Monsoor, apologies if I mispronounce that, was an American rock guitarist. He was a pioneer of surf music, drawing on Middle Eastern music scales and experimenting with reverberation. He also worked closely with Fender, Fender Musical Instruments, to produce custom-made amplifiers, including the first ever 100-watt guitar amplifier. So he pushed the limits of volume. He was the first Nigel Tufnel.
He was a Lebanese American, yes, and a lot of this. Okay, sorry.
He pushed the limits of amplification technology, helping to produce equipment that was capable of producing louder guitar sound without sacrificing reliability. He learned to play piano when he was 9 after listening to his aunt at playing, and he was given a trumpet in 7th grade, and later acquired a ukulele, having been influenced by Hank Williams. Eventually, he bought a guitar from a friend for $8. He was of Lebanese descent on his father's side and was influenced musically by his uncle, who taught him to play the tarabaki, which is a drum, which later influenced his guitar playing, particularly his rapid alternate picking technique. Dale referred to this technique as the pulsation, noting that all instruments he played derived from the tarabaki.
Wow. Okay, that makes sense.
From a drum. If you know Middle Eastern drumming, Eastern music is all about the drums.
Mm-hmm.
His interest in Arabic music later played a major role in his development of surf rock music. Dale later said, "There was a tremendous amount of power I felt while surfing, and that feeling of power was simply transferred into my guitar." In the 60s, he began playing in local country bars where he met Texas Tiny, who gave him the name Dick Dale because he thought it would be a good name for a country singer. Dale passed away in Loma Linda, California on March 16th of this year at the age of 81.
And that's the real beauty of like Mr. Lou, where it is Middle Eastern. It's a
traditional Middle Eastern song. I've just found out.
It's, you know, everything just coming together. Yeah.
It's an old Middle Eastern song, like centuries old, that he just adapted to his style. And we've got a part two, and I would say part three of that on this album.
Yes, we do.
King of the Surf Guitar was Dale's second album. It was released in June of 1963 on Capitol Records, produced by Jim Monsoor. I'm wondering if that's his brother or father. I'm guessing they're related.
And Jim was the name of his son also. So
probably his father.
Yeah.
And Voyle Gilmore, and features Dick Dale on lead guitar and vocals, which was not listed on Wikipedia, but he
does. That's very odd. I noticed that. There was, like, who the fuck is singing? And I guess
yeah, and Dick. Eventually I checked a couple other places and it was Dick Dale.
Yeah.
Art Monson, Renee Hall, Glenn Campbell, Barney Kessel, yes, guitar players, you heard those last two correctly, and Nick O'Malley on guitar, Ray Sambra and Brian Dietz on bass, Leon Russell and Bill Barber on piano, Hal Blaine, Jack Lake, and Jerry Stevens on drums. Jerry Brown, probably not that Jerry Brown. Lee Farrell, Larry Gillette, Risden Guartney, Barry Rillera, and Armin Frank on sax, and The Blossoms on background vocals.
So I've been trying to figure out, is this like, was this the Wrecking Crew with him? Or are these just happen to be members of the Wrecking Crew?
Well, the Wrecking Crew were all very in-demand session players. The Wrecking Crew was a very incredibly well-respected group of session players in California who played on pretty much everything from the mid to late 50s through the 70s.
I thought they really didn't come in until like the mid 60s. Well, I think they were started before that.
I mean, some people came in the 60s, some people came in at different times. They swapped out members, but I think it started in the 50s. But most known in the 60s. They played on the Beach Boys, they played on the Doors albums. You mentioned Carole Kaye played on LA Woman.
Yeah, and that was just her, not the Wrecking Crew.
But my point is that, like, in that case, members of the Wrecking Crew did sessions that didn't involve the other members of the Wrecking Crew. they did whatever they got paid. They played on whatever they got paid to play on. So Glenn Campbell was a session player. Bernie Kessel was a session player. I never knew that Leon Russell was a session player. That's interesting. Anyway, reminder, I don't edit any songs into our episodes for copyright reasons, but down in the description, as well as on our blog at johnandscotto.com, you'll find links to find King of the Surf Guitar on Spotify and YouTube. On to track one, King of the Surf Guitar, the title track. This is basically a boast track.
It just comes out, and it comes out as loud, I mean, as you could imagine. Yeah. Like, that guitar just runs right through your head.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as it starts.
And that's awesome. But then you have the backup singers saying, you know, listen to the King of the Surf Guitar. And doing a hype, just doing hype for Dick Dale.
Oh, yeah. It's like, it's kind of like surf rock meets Motown. It's pretty damn incredible, actually.
I could have done without the singers.
Oh, yeah.
The lead guitar bits were great. But the singers are just kind of cringy for me.
I like the mix.
I would love it if the vocals were cut out.
I like a good Motown.
And the thing that right away is announced with this is that this album is a lot more 50s than you would expect from Dick Dale's reputation. It's still in that 50s doo-wop kind of vein.
Yeah, well, this is just pre-Beatles, so we are quite, like, in between, yeah.
Yeah. And also, the drums are on the right, the percussion is on the left, I think the bass is on the left, too. And it didn't bother me. Normally, as you know, I bitch about that sort of thing. Yeah. I'm all about the snare, kick, and bass have to be right in the middle. But it didn't bother me on the whole album. I didn't really notice it after this song.
And who knows how it was originally recorded and replayed back.
It was the same as the Aretha Franklin album. So I think a lot of that, I think maybe stereo recording was kind of...
I would think Aretha was later.
It was later, 68 if I recall.
Yeah.
But I think in this time, I think stereo recording was kind of being pioneered.
Right. I think like the stuff the Beatles did really changed stereo recording.
So they were first, it was a new toy. So they were experimenting, and it took some years before they realized the kick, snare, and bass have to be in the middle, unless you're doing it for an effect.
Yeah.
Loved the sort of abrupt slides he does. He just goes up and down, but it's not just a regular slide. It's just this quick slide to a dead stop. It's just this great effect. And it's just kind of mercifully short.
Oh, everything on this album is like incredibly short.
Yeah. We reviewed 12 of the 14 tracks. The Spotify version, the YouTube version, there's 14. There's only 12 listed on Wikipedia, so I'm guessing that was the original release.
And I think there was a version on YouTube that only had 12, but then I found the other version that had 14. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. I had some quick notes about the other two.
The older albums are really tough to nail down because there's so many compilations.
But this is 12 tracks in less than a half hour.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was 33, I think, with the 14, so less than a half hour, 12 songs.
Well, think about it. This is proto-punk, you know? I mean, this is kind of like between Buddy Holly and, you know, but of course way before the Ramones.
Right, and then, Buddy Holly. We got to do some Buddy Holly.
And then, of course, the Dead Kennedys. The Dead Kennedys were pretty much all like a surf rock sound to them. Before they had child actors.
I kind of low-key worship Buddy Holly, so we got to get to his
time. Yeah.
Way the fuck ahead of his time.
Or a Mary Tyler Moore.
On to track two, The Lonesome Road. This goes a bit country, but in a good way.
A little, yeah. Well, yeah, I guess everything he did was kind of country. I like how he makes the guitar a lead singer.
Yeah, yeah. We finally get an instrumental. Really nice groove. This is where I noticed the bass is on the left. I love the sort of waterish, as I call it, delay heave, as if during the sax solo. It's just this kind of dripping delay he has. and I think it's before there were effects pedals.
Right.
Way before.
So oh, yeah.
He was doing this all in the amp and on the recording.
Hendrix, you got to imagine, took a lot from him.
He's one of those guys. I mean, he's very influential for surf music, but I never realized how influential he was just in terms of effects and processing and getting weird sounds out of a guitar.
I mean, he used to guitar what Keith Emerson was to keyboards.
Yeah, and he doesn't get his credit. I mean, he is well respected, but I don't think a lot of people fully realize how influential he was.
Keith Emerson doesn't get credit either.
Yeah, you pretty much have to be a prog head to have any idea who he is.
Yeah, definitely.
But again, another very 50s-ish song, but a great groove. And again, we just get some great lead playing. He just solos over the whole thing.
I think this is the longest song on the album, actually. It's over 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't feel long, and it gets broken up with the sax solo.
And when I skimmed through it, as I always do, before today, actually. I was running a little late. And I was dreading this album with the vocals.
Really?
I was like, oh shit, I picked another bad tribute. But because there were so many vocal songs, and I was expecting Miserable top to bottom.
It's kind of a mix.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't expecting the pop aspect of the album either, which is really what it is.
Yeah. But I ended up really enjoying that part of it.
Yeah.
On to track 3, Kansas City. This is the first one where he sings.
Right. I'm like, wait, what?
And I didn't know that until I looked it up, I think, on Discogs earlier today.
Yeah.
He did sing on this. And it's got a weird, it's a blues song. It's a blues standard, Kansas City.
Yeah.
But it's got a weird groove for a blues song. It's not a shuffle. It's kind of an early rock song.
I would put it in the pop category for its time, definitely.
It's weird to hear a blues standard in that groove.
Yeah, I think that's what he plays with. You know,
he takes
shit that you're like, wait a minute, you're doing that on a rock album or a pop album?
Yeah.
You're like, yeah.
And there's no guitar solo on this one.
No.
But the rhythm guitar definitely sounds like him. There's one of the guitars in there that is clearly Dick Dale.
I'd like to see Primus cover this.
Oh, yeah. yes. I thought about that for a second. The heavy delay he's still got on there. And the sax solo is brilliant. I mean, he
played with Primus, actually. Yeah. I think that would have been a great combination.
I mean, saxophone is not why we're here, but the sax playing was brilliant.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he had Glenn Campbell playing guitar with him, and it was probably just for some simple chords that he was having Glenn Campbell play. You know, he was spending, I mean, they were getting the best musicians possible.
Right, yeah. I just have to wonder why in 63 they were doing such a 50s-inspired album. You know,
I think
we're kind of a few years behind the curve.
I really think this is of its time. I mean, this is what was going on pre-Beatles.
Yeah, the Beatles really did change a lot.
Yeah, pre-British invasion, you know.
Right. On to track 4, Dick Dale Stomp, one of the few written by Dick Dale, which I assumed meant it was an instrumental. It was going to be another Miserable. But it's a vocal number that's very doo-wop. Feels a bit like Palisades Park.
It is just a straight kind of short rock song.
Yeah. And it's two songs in a row with no guitar solos on a Dick Dale album.
And it's a very straightforward, almost a straightforward version of the next song, actually. It runs very quickly, this one. Yeah. You know, like the first listen was kind of like, wait, what just happened?
And the next one is one of those moments where I love Dick Dale. I you know, he was a legend. But this was a misstep.
Oh, yeah. We are in agreement there.
On the track 5, What Did I Say? Written by Ray Charles. The classic Ray Charles song. Practically Ray Charles theme song. And Dick Dale is singing it.
This is my notes. I like a little more Dick in it. Did I say that out loud?
Mm-hmm. It's just a train wreck. The grunts in the second verse that work with, because Ray Charles was fucking Ray Charles.
Right.
You know, after the part, it's just disturbing.
What should have happened here, and I wish I could have talked to him about this before his passing. Why wouldn't you
do an instrumental cover?
Play the guitar for the oves and the grunts and that.
Yes.
Like, he could have sang the rest of it.
Yeah, sure.
But he could, for those parts, that would be a fucking awesome guitar part to play. Yeah. And
yeah, just separate it by an octave instead of doing the call and response thing. Yeah.
And doing that shit in 63 would have had people's heads would have exploded probably if they heard a guitar doing that. But yeah. But
the solo,
definitely the weakest on the album.
Solo, not quite my weakest, one of the weakest, as was the Bose track in the beginning. Not quite my pick for absolute weakest yet. But the two guitar solos and the sax solo make it tolerable. He's in rare form on the solos. That is classic Dale.
I almost didn't put this in the playlist of unoriginality, but I decided, why not? It's weird.
We all understand the past. I mean, there's a lot you could put on this album in that playlist.
I did, I think. Well, actually, a lot of this made my luau list.
Oh, well, of course.
I have a very good luau list, which is mostly surf rock, of course. Mm-hmm. But you got the slide guitar. Yeah. And then you've got ukulele, you mm-hmm. know, music.
Like classic Hawaiian old school ukulele
yes.
music? Okay, yes. not like Jake Shimokura stuff.
You're right. And then maybe a little Elvis and Beach Boys in there too, but you know, and Dono.
Classic geeky stuff.
Yeah. It's a good list.
Yeah. On to track 6, Greenback Dollar. This one was interesting. Another vocal song.
This is weird.
Another vocal number, no guitar solos. Even though he mentions a guitar in the chorus, he doesn't make a solo.
It's weird because it's upbeat and downbeat at the same time, I think.
Really interesting melody. His voice what the fits fuck? It. And he kind of plays with the melody on this one.
Vocally, he
plays with it. This is one of my favorites. This was my favorite until the next track. And I was kind of weird about putting a non-guitar solo song as my favorite. But fortunately, the next one won me over. But onto this one. Really interesting vocal. Like, he kind of plays with the vocal.
Yes.
He wasn't a great singer by any means.
No.
But he was an interesting vocal stylist.
I think George Thorogood should pay him royalties for every song he's ever recorded, because this song is pretty much every George Thorogood song ever recorded.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just, I think it was like the second or third listen, I was like, dude, he just completely ripped this off.
Yeah,
like, even the Bo Diddley covers, he should pay him royalties.
Yeah. And now on to track 7, it gets fucking real.
Like, last note, I was Dick Dell getting weird, and of course this one, did I say getting weird? Turn it to this.
Now it gets fucking real. Track 7, Havanagila. Yes, that Havanagila.
He mashes up Miserlou and Havanagila.
But also based on a traditional Middle Eastern melody.
Of course.
As was Miserlou. You know, this is his heritage. His mother was Polish and Belarusian, so it's entirely possible that he was Jewish. But yeah, this is, you know, where this was his big influence as a kid. And this is also credited to Dick Dale. I know he didn't write Havanagila.
He also wrote the Old Testament?
Yeah, obviously he arranged it, but it's on Wikipedia credited to him.
That's pretty funny.
This is the first real surf group we get.
Oh yeah.
This is classic, Buddy Holly influenced surf drums, because the drummer for the Crickets invented surf rock as much as Dick Dale did. And we get the tremolo picking finally, the pulsation as he called
it,
which is his trademark. This is Miserlou Part 2.
Yes, definitely. I'm sure he's performed these in a medley.
Yeah. And this is, honestly, this is worth the price of admission in and of itself.
It could be, right. Definitely... I'm back and forth between one other song in this album mm-hmm. is the strongest.
This is my favorite.
This is definitely up there.
Talking about this one, you were lamenting that Miserlou wasn't on it. You basically got Miserlou.
Yes, I know. I did. I was like, yeah, cool. I mean, I've always loved Dick Dale, though. I mean, I've listened. There was a phase when we were recording Zombie Takeout where before recording I would listen to Miserlou before just to get started and get going, and because, you know, I was probably just ready to fall asleep before we started recording
a little bit,
and Miserlou would be that thing to get, you know, pumped and going.
Honestly, I mean, all due respect, it's a great piece, but I'm sick of it. I hear it so often.
I don't think I could hear it enough.
I'm just bored with it. Which is why Havanagila was so great, because this is the same spirit. with something I haven't heard a billion times.
And then, you know, there's Mr. Lou just on its own, and then of course there's Mr. Lou with Pulp Fiction quotes in there. You know, I mean, it never gets old.
So I love this. On to track 8, You Are My Sunshine. Yes, that You Are My Sunshine.
What a weird choice to cover, man.
He's singing again, very doo-wop. Nice little groove on it, though.
As a kid, I've always hated this song.
I never liked it either.
It is not a good song.
No, no. But he does.
Not this version, of course. I've never heard this version until now. I mean, think about it. The tone of the original is pleading. You know, it's, please don't take my sunshine away. As a kid, you're listening to it. Wait a minute. There's this thing of enjoyment. Right. And then there's this, wait a minute, this thing of enjoyment's being taken away.
Right.
I mean, as a kid, I'm like, wait, what the fuck? What's going on? What's wrong here? But he changes the lyric. Uh-huh. Don't you take her away.
Right, yeah. And it means the same thing, but it's just, it twists the
that's bit. Quite a difference, I think. Please don't take my sunshine away to... Don't you take her away.
Basically saying the same thing in just with a different intent.
Yeah, right. I mean, that changes the meaning though entirely. That's like, I'm going to fuck you up. Yeah. It's not, I'm going to be sad. It's, this will not end here. This will. I mean, it's only a minute and 58, but you know, you get the gist. He's going to fuck someone up.
Yeah.
Shout out to Link Ray and Rumble, I guess. Oh,
yeah. Another classic. Such a simple song, but so brilliant.
Yeah, that's what I love about surf rock. It is so simple, and yet it's just like it's on, you know.
Well, and Link Ray was a little before; he was 50s.
Yes,
he was a big influence on it, of course.
Yes,
he was the godfather of heavy metal, I think. Mm-hmm.
Although I think Dick Dale even gets that moniker.
He gets a little bit of credit for that too, particularly with
playing with the amps. Yeah, that was a big king. And I don't know why the Beatles didn't like take some of his direction, because the problem with the Beatles seeing them live was you couldn't fucking hear them.
Yeah. They're playing these Vox AC-30s and in Madison Square Garden.
And these kids were just screaming, you know, the girls were screaming so loud, you couldn't hear the Beatles. Right. So all the talk about the Beatles being such a great live band, it's kind of like, where are they? Because, I mean, the reason why they stopped playing live is because they weren't happy with the experience.
Right.
There was no point. Nobody knew if they were doing, if they had a bad night or a good night, because people were just screaming anyway, so... That's it. Why didn't they listen to Dick Dale and blow them out?
Every metal band who just wanted to go that much louder for the sake of being that much louder owes a debt to Dick Dale.
Of course.
Never knew that until researching this.
That's great, though. He hooks up with Fender, Joe Fender or whatever.
Leo Fender. Ren
was Leo the, Fender, yeah.
Was the founder of the company, yeah, the namesake. to say, make my amps louder.
Yeah, I need them louder. What?
Jim Marshall was just like 5 years too late.
Yeah.
I think Marshall came in later. But again, great sax solo on this one. Again, not while we're here.
But yeah, a song I don't like, but I think I like how
a great version of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
On to track 9, Mexico, another instrumental. More classic Dale.
Yeah.
He's tremolo picking double stops. Double stops are kind of when you play two notes at the same time. That's a double stop.
This one might actually be my pick for favorite, because
this is another great one.
It just screams summer, and that's what you. I mean, this is like the quintessential luau song, I think, you know.
And we finally get him trading off with the sax, which was brilliant.
Yes, of course. That is kind of what you're waiting for. Like, let's get into this.
and even during the sax solo, he's playing these muted arpeggios that are just so classic Dale. And this is why he's a legend.
Yeah.
On to track 10, Break Time, also written by Dick Dale. Another instrumental. This one goes very Duane Eddy.
Right. Another great guitar as the lead vocal. Yeah. You know?
It's just this big, low riff with this dripping delay. Like I said, Duane Eddy. Duane Eddy did the what is this classic? Do 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 that song. the theme song for the show. I can't think of the name of it.
Peter Gunn.
Theme. Peter Gunn. Thank you. I couldn't think of the name of it. That's Dwayne Eddy, the Peter Gunn theme. And he's borrowing from Dwayne Eddy very definitely on this. Great. Again, now we get the shuffle.
Yeah, this one isn't as strong as the others, but I don't think it's supposed to be strong. It's just kind of an interlude.
Yeah, yeah. More trading off with the sax. Loved the dripping reverb and delay on the solos and at the end. Another one of my favorites. And now on to track 11, Riders in the Sky.
Which makes sense.
And I think he did this before The Ventures.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'd have to double check that, but the 63 sounds like it's before The Ventures. The Ventures did a very famous cover of this. And yeah, this is another surf groove. It's Bizarre Loop Part 3.
Yeah.
But with more trading off on the sax, what else can you say about Dick Dale just being Dick Dale? And initially, I thought this should have ended it. Because we get to track 12, If I Never Get to Heaven, and it's a vocal ballad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of...
felt weird for the last track of the original release.
I thought it was a good way to end it, though, you know?
I got about halfway through and I realized it's the denouement.
Yeah.
You know, Riders was the climax.
Well, right. He was following that path, you know, that we see so many later artists do. I didn't know they were doing that at this point because I didn't think the album was all that serious of a format back at this point. Still
singles were king at this point.
Yeah. So the fact that he put that much thought into the album was kind of like, whoa, wait a minute.
And this is the most 50s song on the album.
Yes. You know,
it's just classic 50s ballad. But he's having a lot of fun with the phrasing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's singing this. You can hear him having fun with just playing with how he's singing.
Right.
And I was expecting it at the beginning to get horribly cringy, but it really did win me over. Now onto the last two tracks, just some quick notes. Lobo and Cotton Picking. Both instrumentals. Both good, but not particularly noteworthy.
Yeah,
you heard them, okay.
Were B-sides.
Yeah.
Obviously B-sides. They were not his strongest.
The only thing that really caught my attention, I think that's probably why they were added after the fact. I think they were probably added after the fact.
They're probably B-sides to singles.
That somebody threw on a version of the album.
Yeah.
That's on Spotify now and in a couple other places. But Cotton Picking has this low riff at the beginning that the J. Seffert song Bad Things, the True Blood theme, completely ripped off.
Oh, wow.
Are you familiar with the song?
Not exactly. True Blood theme?
The theme song for the show True Blood that was on HBO.
No, not familiar with that.
It starts with this guitar riff. And I'm not going to sing because you heard me try to sing a guitar riff before. That is straight out of Cotton Picking. I'll play it for you, the J. Seffert song.
Who knows how commonly known this even is, because it's just like a B-side that, I mean, only
he's heard of the bonus track. J. Seffert, or whoever wrote Bad Things, stole that from Dick Dale directly. It's a quote. There's nothing really else to talk about with this last two. Obvious stupid question, would you recommend it?
Yes, definitely. I've had a lot of fun with Dick Dale this week. There's like a YouTube, I've listened to him play Pipeline with Stevie Ray Vaughan this week. There's also like him playing Smoke on the Water.
Oh, I gotta find that.
I'll send you the link.
Wow.
A surf rock version of Smoke on the Water.
Wow. Like Stevie Ray, I've heard the Pipeline with Stevie Ray. It's incredible, but I've never heard him do Smoke on the Water. Wow. Ouch. Yeah, well, particularly because Ritchie Blackmore was so far removed from Dick Dale.
Right. Instead of a slow plodding, riff, it's,
wow. Surf on the fucking water. Wow. I absolutely recommend it too. The Bosch track and the Ritchie, the Ray Charles cover were both really cringy. But the instrumentals show why he's one of the greatest and most influential guitarists.
Oh, what was the other one that you thought was that you didn't like all that much? Oh, the intro.
The intro. King of the guitar. The Bosch track and the Ray Charles cover. But the instrumental show why he's one of the greatest, most influential guitarists of all time. And the rest of the vocal tracks were really fun.
Yeah.
It won me over. That's it for King of the Surf Guitar. Rest in peace, Mr. Mansoor Dayal. Yes. Thank you for all the great music. Until next time, we'll be reviewing You Say I'm Too Much, I Say You're Not Enough by Estrons. I put that in next because I think it's a nice bridge between that and the Living Color album that we were talking about.
Oh, okay.
And it's also kind of a tribute album or episode because Estrons split up way too early and way too abruptly. Interesting story there. We'll get to it next week. Until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.